Ramo vacha. Ritastubhyam aham tata. Swasti stad vam kshitishvara. Yam nirvyali kena hrita. Shadhi metyat manarpitam. Lord Brahma said, "My dear son, O Lord of the world, I am very pleased with you, and I desire all blessings for both you and your wife. You have without reservation surrendered yourself unto me with your heart for my instructions." Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The relationship between the Father and the Son is always sublime. The Father is naturally disposed with good will towards the Son, and He is always ready to help the Son in his progress in life. But in spite of the Father's goodwill, the Son is sometimes misguided because of his misuse of personal independence. Every living entity, however small or big he may be, has the choice of independence. If the Son is unreservedly willing to be guided by the Father is 10 times more eager to instruct and guide him by all means. The Father and Son relationship, as exhibited herein, in the dealings of Brahma and Manu, is excellent. Both the Father and the Son are well qualified, and their example should be followed by all humankind. Manu, the Son, unreservedly asks the Father, Brahma, to instruct him. And the Father, who was full of all Vedic wisdom, was very glad to instruct. The example of the Father of mankind may be rigidly followed by mankind, and that will advance the cause of the relationship of fathers and sons. My dear son, O Lord of the world, I am very pleased with you, and I desire all blessings for both you and your wife. You have without reservation surrendered yourself unto me with your heart for my instructions. Dura, who was a very humble and gentle devotee of the Lord, is herein inquiring from Maitreya Muni about the glories of the Lord's devotees. Vidura knew well how much the Lord loves his devotees. Previously, Vidura, when he was living in Hastinapur, he was considered the son of a Sudrani, a maidservant, and therefore he was not given the opulence and the position of the other great members of the royal dynasty of Kuru. On one occasion, Duryodhana invited Krishna for prasad. His idea was to very diplomatically please Krishna in so many ways that Krishna would favor him and come to his side. Duryodhana was very expert at this art. He was the most brilliant person. But unfortunately, his God-given brilliance was being utilized for his own personal interest. and therefore it all simply worked against his real self-interest. It is better to be a fool and know very little than to be a very intelligent person and misuse your intelligence. Because a person with great intelligence who misuses it not only creates so many incredible ways for his own bondage and ruination, but also creates such havoc by misguiding others. Mayayaparitajnanam. People who have great substance of material knowledge, but who are captivated by Maya, illusion. And that illusion means that I am the doer, and ultimately I am the enjoyer. But whatever intelligence we may have, that if it's utilized according to our natural spiritual position, that I am the servant, then that intelligence becomes a very, very great asset, not only to us, but to the welfare of all living beings. So Duryodhana was tremendously powerful in his physical and mental capacity. He was such a good fighter, even Bhima could not defeat him until Krishna somehow or other told him to cheat. It was the only way. And Duryodhana, to get people to be on his side, he was so clever. He would oblige people. He would do favors for people so that their inner conscience could not do anything except help him in every possible way. The story, we saw the beautiful, beautiful drama last night of the Bhaktivedanta players of Kunti and Radheya. How Duryodhana used his intelligence. He saw that Karna, who was born as the first son of Kunti, was such a tremendous military expert. When he came into that great tournament and started shooting his arrows, everyone was shocked. He was doing things even the great Arjuna could not do. But somehow or other, because of his apparent low birth as the son of Adirat and Radhe, a charioteer, he was not qualified because he wasn't fully a kshatriya of the merit that was required to take part in this tournament. And he was being criticized. And Duryodhana, with his incredible keen intelligence, could understand, here's the opportunity. So what he did is he praised Radha. He became his dear friend, and he gave him his own kingdom just so he would be recognized as a ruler and a kshatriya. And because of that, Radheya, his heart was so much overwhelmed in gratitude and indebtedness. And Duryodhana did not do it out of simple love for Radheya. He did it because he wanted him on his side, because he knew he could defeat Arjuna. And he indebted him to such an extent that even when Kunti Devi herself begged him, you are my son, and Krishna begged him, you are the brother of the Pandavas, fight with us, either be ruler of the world or be destroyed. His reply was, I would rather be destroyed. I would rather have my heart broken in thousands of pieces to displease my mother and even fight against my beloved brothers, but I cannot go against Duryodhana, who has done so much for me. And there's another story in Mahabharata, how one of the relatives of Yudhisthira, who had very powerful Maharati with huge armies, he was actually coming to join camps with Yudhisthira on the way to this, to just before the battle of Kurukshetra. Duryodhana and Yudhisthira were recruiting the kings all over the world to try to join them. And what, Salva? What was his name?
Mahadevi.
Huh? Salya. He was coming, and as he was coming with his armies, Duryodhana, he knew he was going to Yudhisthira. So he, wherever he was coming at the evening, there was big, big pandals and wonderful feasts of incredible prasad and dancing and singing and music and nice, nice beds to sleep on. And Salya was thinking, oh, Yudhisthira is so nice. What kind of wonderful, grand arrangements. He's going out of his way so much to satisfy us. And every night there was an exposition of hospitality like this. And he was just thinking, my life, my soul, how could I not fight for Yudhisthira? Such love and affection he's showing, way beyond anyone's expectations. But then on the last night, Duryodhana came forward. And he explained, it was me that was giving you all of this. Oh, I am so indebted to you. What can I do for you? You fight on my side against the Pandavas. He could not resist. He had to do it. So this was the intelligence of Duryodhana. Such a brilliant person. So he tried to do the same thing to Krishna by giving Krishna all kinds of respect and glorification and sense gratification. He wanted to diplomatically get Krishna to be on his side. But Krishna says in Gita, of cheaters, I am the gambler. I am the greatest cheat. You can fool some of the people some of the time. You can never fool all the people all the time. But Krishna can never be fooled. So Duryodhana, wanting to get Krishna to be with him instead of the Pandavas, he arranged a glorious, glorious festival in the honor of Krishna. There were dancers and singers and sumptuous prasad on the most ornamented plates, and he had gifts of jewelry and everything to offer Krishna. And Krishna knew. When he came to Hastinapur, instead he decided to go to the house of Vidura. He just completely neglected Duryodhana and went in a different direction. And Vidura just lived a very simple way. And he didn't even know Krishna was coming. He wasn't even home. And when Krishna arrived, Vidura's wife, what can I do? There's a whole big feast at Duryodhana's house. There's nothing here except some bananas. So in her great nervousness, she peeled the bananas and threw the banana away and gave Krishna the peel. And he ate it in great ecstasy from the hands of his devotee. Rather than accept even the most luxurious offerings of a person with material motivation, he finds the greatest happiness accepting the simplest offering by those who have pure devotion. And sometimes Vidura would sit with Krishna, and sometimes he would feed Krishna, and sometimes as Krishna was resting, he would take Krishna's feet and put them on his lap and massage them. Vidura knew how much Krishna loves his devotees. And ultimately, by the power of Duryodhana's envy, fear, Duryodhana was banished. He was not allowed to live in Hastinapur. This was a very, very great crisis, as we were speaking of last night. He had to leave his family, he had to leave his home, he had to leave all of his inheritance that he had all of his life. His life was threatened by his own nephew. He said, if you leave now, you can leave with your breath and nothing else. If you do not leave now, you will not even have your breath. So Duryodhana, when he was only trying to help Dhritarashtra. He was only trying to be his friend. And Dhritarashtra supported his son. who was the cause of his ruination and downfall. He was insulted terribly, but he accepted it as Krishna's mercy. He accepted it as the blessing of the Lord, and he went on pilgrimage. He went to so many holy places, and ultimately he met with Maitreya Muni. And Maitreya Muni, being a very, very senior and great personality, Vidura was inquiring from him. Vidura was already a personal associate of the Lord, pure devotee of the Lord. He was son of Vedavyas. But yet, the nature of a great soul is he's always anxious to take a humble position and inquire submissively to hear the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Great souls never think themselves to be great souls. They're always anxious to learn, always anxious to hear from great souls. So here he is inquiring from Maitreya Muni about the creation of Brahma and about the glorious qualities of Svayambhuva Manu. Svayambhuva Manu was born of Brahma. He was married. He became a grihastha under the direction of his father. And he's one of the 12 Mahajans, one of the greatest spiritual authorities. And why was he such a great spiritual authority? This is being illustrated in this chapter, Srimad Bhagavatam. Because he was so eager to hear from his spiritual master and willing to put his heart and soul into serving the instructions of his father and spiritual master, Lord Brahma. And when the disciple is eager to hear and very, very satisfied and enthusiastic to make sacrifice to serve, the spiritual master becomes very, very pleased and showers his blessings upon that disciple. And it is those blessings that actually give spiritual strength to the disciple to be able to overcome the obstacles of material life on the path of devotion. Lord Brahma was especially pleased with Svayambhuva Manu. Srila Prabhupada explains, because just before this, he instructed the four Kumaras. And they were not at all obedient to Brahma. Brahma told the four Kumaras that you are born from my mind, you are my sons, now I order you to get married and become prajapatis. And populate the world with living beings. And the four Kumaras, my dear father, O Brahma, we will not do this with all respect and honor to you. We will be brahmacharis. And Lord Brahma could not believe they were disobeying him. They were not assisting him in his mission to the Lord. Parampara means we all assist our guru in the service he has to his guru. That's all. That's what parampara is. The guru is never something of himself. He is the servant of his guru, who is the servant of his guru, who is the servant of his guru, and everyone is just assisting their guru in the service to their guru. That is parampara. When Brahma was born on the lotus flower from Lord Garbhodakshayi Vishnu, the Lord imparted all transcendental knowledge to him. Tene brahma hridaya adhakaviye. And then he gave him a service. Now I have given you the transcendental realization. I have shown you Vaikuntha. I have given you the personal darshan of myself. I've explained to you all knowledge in the four nutshell verses of Srimad Bhagavatam contained within the second canto. He concentrated all transcendental wisdom and explained it to Brahma. And he said, now, you be guru. You have the knowledge, you have the realization, and you serve me. And how you serve me? You create all the manifestations, the physical manifestations within this universe. 14 planetary systems were there in the stem of the lotus flower. He told him to develop those planetary systems. And Krishna already, in the form of Mahavishnu, impregnated the Mahatattva, impregnated the cosmic manifestation with all the living entities whose karma it was to be in those universes through his glance. But Brahma was in charge of creating the various vessels or material bodies for all those living entities to reside in, to enjoy and suffer according to their karmic situation. But ultimately, all of them were to be guided by Lord Brahma in the path of self-realization, so they would never have to take birth again in this material world, but go back home, back to Godhead. This was his service to his guru, Krishna. So all of his sons, he simply told them, assist me in my service to my Guru Maharaj. And when he told the Kumaras, they said, no, we will not be entangled by family life. And Brahma, he was not angry for his own sense gratification. He was angry because they were causing an impediment to the service of the Lord on one level. And actually, if someone causes an impediment in the service of our guru, then that is the time when it is licensed to become angry. Anger in this material world is when our lust is unfulfilled or when someone alters the expectations of our false ego. Then we become angry like fire. That anger simply burns away all of our piety, all of our good acts of the past, and all of our spiritual progress. Therefore, Krishna says in Gita that lust, anger, and greed are the three gates that lead to hell. Every sane man must give them up if he wants to make real progress in life. But Brahma is illustrating here that when there is someone creates an impediment to the will of the Lord or the service of the Lord, then anger may be used to remove that obstacle. Just like when Hanuman was trying to get Sita, because Ravana and the monk and the Rakshasa army of Sri Lanka were causing an impediment to the will of the Lord, the service of the Lord, he became so angry. He was so angry he burned the whole city of Lanka with the fire on his tail. And Arjuna, before the battle began, he was telling Krishna, actually, I don't mind. Give the whole kingdom to Duryodhana. But his guru, Krishna, said, no. I want this kingdom to be in the hands of Yudhisthira. You fight for me. So in order to fight, Arjuna was angry as anything to remove all these impediments from the will of the Lord. So we should understand that Brahma's anger was something very sublime. And the proof of that is what was the result of his anger. When we become angry, we just cause a mess and make aparads. But when Brahma became angry, Lord Rudra, Shiva, appeared from between his eyes and took birth in this world. Vaishnavanam yathashambhu, the greatest of all Vaishnavas is Shankar. He appeared in this world through the anger of Brahma. But anyways, Prabhupada explains that the four Kumaras, because they had a higher purpose, their disobedience to their father was appreciated and sanctioned. And ultimately, even Lord Brahma was very happy that the four Kumaras became brahmacharis, because they wanted to preach the glories of the Lord. But Swayambhuva Manu, he was so submissive when the Lord told, when Brahma told him to get married, Swayambhuva Manu immediately accepted a wife and was immediately willing to carry out his instructions. And he was inquiring so submissively, how can I serve you? How can I please you? What should I do? How should I do it? My heart, my soul, everything is surrendered to you, my guru, my father. And Brahma bestowed his blessings. And thus Swayambhu Manu, being so submissive to his father and guru, became one of the great Mahajans and one of the greatest, most celebrated personalities in all Vedic histories. Manu Samhita, the very laws that govern mankind, were revealed through this great personality. So Prabhupada here explains that this is the perfect illustration of how father and son should be. The father should be a representative of the Lord, and the son should be completely submissive and willing to serve the father in every way. And we find such wonderful examples of this, which is the real culture of Krishna consciousness. In Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's wonderful Leela, we find how the Lord encouraged his devotees who had really Krishna conscious parents to always follow the instructions and serve their parents. One example, when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to Bangladesh, he was teaching everyone Sanskrit grammar, and he had hundreds and hundreds of people coming to Bangladesh to learn from him. And anyone who sat with Lord Chaitanya even for 1 month learned more than people learn after studying for 14 years. They became experts, great scholars, and authorized teachers of the highest caliber. But as he was about to leave one great sage to another great pundit, to another great rishi, inquiring from them, and he was scrutinizingly and studying so many scriptures, he was such a scholar, but he couldn't come to the conclusion. And he was praying to the Lord. And one evening, a very, very divine personality appeared to him in a dream and said, "The Supreme Personality of Godhead has appeared on earth. He is now in Bangladesh in the form of Nimai Pandit, the great scholar. You go to him, you surrender your life to him, you inquire from him, and he will tell you what is the goal of life and how to achieve it." So as Lord Chaitanya was just about to leave Bangladesh, so many people were coming and offering gifts. So many people were saying, "I'm coming with you to Navadvip. We can never leave your association." And it was a wonderful, wonderful festival of everyone offering their farewell to their beloved teacher. At that time, Tapan Mishra approached and fell at the feet of Nimai and inquired from him submissively, "Please tell me, what is the goal of life? And how do I achieve that goal? I've looked everywhere. I've searched through all the books. I've inquired from the rishis. I've prayed. Now I have come to you." Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained to him that the goal of life is Krishna, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is a beautiful transcendental form which is constituted of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. He is the cause of all causes. And to serve him with pure, unalloyed love and devotion is the goal of life. And how to achieve that goal? Only through the 9 processes of devotional service. And in this age of Kali Yuga, there is the Yuga Dharma. The only means of perfecting the 9 processes of devotional service is by chanting the holy names. So today I will give you the Maha Mantra. These 16 words and 13 syllables, if you chant it sincerely in the association of devotees, you will understand Krishna and pure love for Krishna, which is the ultimate goal of life. And then he initiated him into the Maha Mantra. Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Lord Chaitanya said, you take this Maha Mantra, you chant it always, everywhere, in all circumstances. Keep the Maha Mantra always in your heart and on your mouth. Tapan Mishra asked Lord Chaitanya to come to a private place. And he said, I have been told by this divine being that you are the Supreme Lord Krishna. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu revealed his divinity to Tapan Mishra. And he told him, do not tell anyone what you have seen. This information must remain always secret within your heart. It is my will. Tapan Mishra asked Lord Chaitanya, I don't want to any longer be anywhere in this material world. I want to go to Navadvipa with you. I will bring my family. We will all come to Navadvipa. Tapan Mishra knew that Lord Chaitanya had not yet begun his Harinam Sankirtan pastimes. He had not yet gone to Gaya and been initiated. He did not reveal the Hare Krishna Mahamantra to anyone at this time yet. This was a very, very exclusive, secret teaching. But he knew he was about to do it, and he wanted to be there. He wanted to be there when Lord Chaitanya would call all of his eternal associates and begin chanting and dancing in the house of Srivas, in the streets of Navadvipa, exhibiting his divine ecstasies and his transcendental nature. But Lord Chaitanya told Tapan Mishra, for my service, you should not come to Navadvipa. You should go to Kashi. The worst place in all the world for a devotee to go. It was the capital of the Mayavadis. It was the place where there was no devotees. He wanted to go to Navadvipa where the Lord and all the devotees would be having ecstatic kirtan, and the Lord sent him to the place where the only mantra was Aham Brahmasmi, Jagan Mitya Brahma Satyam. You are God. Everything else is illusion. Even Krishna is an illusion. His pastimes are illusion. His names are illusion. His associates are illusion. Even his abode is an illusion. The only thing that is eternal and real truth is the impersonal Brahman. And you are that Brahman. That is the mantra. That is the katha of Varanasi. So Tapan Mishra was willing to surrender. He gave up the opportunity to be dancing in the house of Srivas to go to Varanasi. That was his eagerness to hear and eagerness to serve. And later on, Lord Chaitanya, after taking sannyas, many years later, he came to Varanasi. And he visited with Tapan Mishra. And Tapan Mishra had a son. His name was Raghunath Bhatta. And Raghunath Bhatta had the opportunity in Varanasi to massage the Lord's lotus feet, his legs, and serve him in every menial possible way. When he was just a boy. And some years later, when he grew up a little, Raghunath Bhatta went to Jagannath Puri. And he stayed with the Lord and became the Lord's own personal assistant and servant and pleased the Lord in so many ways. And he stayed there for, I believe it was 8 months. And then Lord Chaitanya instructed Raghunath Bhatta that you must go back to Varanasi and serve your parents. You follow their instructions, you help them, you serve them because they're devotees. And Raghunath Bhatta Goswami went back to Varanasi and very humbly served his parents for many, many years. up until the point his parents left this world to go back to Godhead, chanting the holy names of Gauranga, they all left for the spiritual world. Before Tapan Mishra and his blessed wife left this world, they gave the instruction and the blessing to Raghunath Bhatt. Now you go to Jagannath Puri and you give your life to the personal servants of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So when he returned, he stayed there for another 8 months, and then Lord Chaitanya sent him to Vrindavan. You go, you associate with Rupan Sanatan Goswamis. You always study Srimad Bhagavatam. This was actually his instruction to him when he sent him back to his parents. You go and serve your parents because they are pure devotees. And you always study Srimad Bhagavatam and always chant the holy names. And now he sent them to assist Rupan Sanatan Goswami. Another wonderful occasion of the six Goswamis' Leela was Gopal Bhatta Goswami. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was traveling through South India, he stopped at Sri Ranga, Ranga Kshetra. He danced before the beautiful deity of Ranganath, who is Lord Vishnu lying down in his yoga nidra. And Venkata Bhatta, who was a very great devotee of the Sri Sampradaya and a pujari of the temple, he invited Lord Chaitanya to stay in his home. And he washed Lord Chaitanya's feet. And then he gave that water to all of his family members to drink. And his little son, Gopal Bhatta, he drank that water. First day Lord Chaitanya came to his house, and just by taking that water on his head and drinking, he just began to exhibit symptoms of ecstatic love of God. It's a beautiful story of Lord Chaitanya's mercy upon Gopal Bhatta Goswami. But before Lord Chaitanya left Sri Rangam, he told Gopal Bhatta that you stay here, Venkata Bhatta has become my devotee. He became a completely surrendered servant of the Lord. So you serve them for the rest of their lives. And after they leave this world, then you can go to Vrindavan and join with Rupan Sanatan Goswamis. So Gopal Bhatta remained with his parents, always studying Srimad Bhagavatam. He became a great, great scholar of Srimad Bhagavatam, constantly having Harinam Sankirtan and chanting the holy names of Krishna. In this way, he became famous, even though he was living at home with his parents, as a great pundit, a great scholar, a great teacher, and a great, great Paramahamsa Vaishnava devotee. And he remained with his parents throughout their lives. And at their last moments, Venkata Bhatta told his son, you go to Vrindavan, you join Rupan Sanatan, but you always worship Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then chanting the holy names of Gauranga, Venkata Bhatta and his wife went back home, back to Godhead. And with the blessings of his father, Gopal Bhatta went to Vrindavan. And he was so faithful to his father that even after Sri Radharaman appeared to him, the beautiful deity of Krishna, who manifested out of a Shalagram Shila simply out of his causeless mercy, he worshipped Radharaman with such love, such devotion. He was his life, his soul. Jai Radharamana, Radharamana, Radhe Gopal Bhatta Vrandana He. He was the life and soul of Gopal Bhatta Goswami. But one day he felt very guilty. Why? Because Lord Chaitanya said you follow your father. And father said you worship Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he was thinking, I'm worshiping Krishna. I'm not worshiping Lord Chaitanya. I'm not following my father. So how could I please the Lord? So as he was thinking like this with an aggrieved heart, Radharaman
immediately, right before his eyes, manifested the beautiful form of Gauranga. That beautiful, divine, golden-limbed form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was casting his beautiful glance upon Gopal Bhatta Goswami. And then Lord Chaitanya again manifested the form of Radharaman. And Gopal Bhatta Goswami understood that Radharaman is Lord Chaitanya. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Radha Krishna Nahi Anya. Therefore, by worshipping Radharaman, I am perfectly fulfilling my father's instructions of worshipping Gauranga. One time, after the Ratiyatra ceremony, when the residents of Bengal came to Orissa to associate with Lord Chaitanya during the 4 months of Chaturmasya, the denizens of Shikhanda, they approached Lord Chaitanya. And there was Narahari Sarkar, who was a very, very great devotee of the Lord. And there was Mukunda Sarkar, who was the elder brother of Narahari. And Mukunda Sarkar was a royal physician. He was a doctor. But he was such a good doctor, even the Islamic kings would ask him for investigations of their health and medications, because he was so empowered by Krishna. Chaitanya Charitamrita explains, once when Mukunda was on a raised platform near the throne of the king was asking him about his health. And at that time, someone came with a peacock fan to fan the king. And Mukunda, immediately seeing the peacock fan, naturally thought of Krishna. And upon thinking of Krishna, he fell into ecstatic love, and he fainted, and he fell off the high platform on the ground. And the king was very upset. Think, is he injured? Is he hurt? Is he alive? And they somehow brought him back to his external consciousness. And the king asked, what happened? What happened? And Mukunda Sarkar, he was very humble. A devotee will never say, I'm in ecstasy. I love Krishna. Rather, he said, actually, I have epilepsy. And sometimes I have these seizures and I faint and I fall. But now I'm all right. It didn't hurt. But the king, although he was a mogul, he was actually, by the association of Mukunda, he was actually very learned, and he understood that he is in a mood of ecstatic love for Krishna. And he told Mukunda Sarkar, now you go home, it's fine. So when Mukunda, his son was Raghunandan Thakur. One day, Lord Chaitanya asked Mukunda, when he was standing with Raghunandan, he said, are you the father or is Raghunandan the father? Who is the father and who is the son? And the father, Mukunda, replied, Raghunandan is my father. My son is my father. Why? He said, because one who inspires one in Krishna consciousness is one's father. And my son is such a devotee that he has inspired me in my Krishna consciousness. He has given me Krishna consciousness. So through this wonderful pastime, we understand what is the definition of a real father. A real mother is those who actually, by their example, by their pure example and their pure words, they give their children Krishna consciousness. To have such a father and such a mother as this is such a priceless gift. And we are obliged to follow them, to serve them, to be eager to help them. They are the representatives of Guru and Gauranga. This is the culture of Krishna consciousness. But if the parents are not of this example of Krishna consciousness, then we have the example of Raghunath Das Goswami. He left his mother, he left his father, and he was the only son.
In the whole family dynasty, he was the only son, the inheritor of millions upon millions of dollars, pounds, rupees, everything. And when he finally escaped from his father and his mother and his uncle, Lord Chaitanya said, Krishna has saved you. He has taken you out of a pit where people go to pass stool in the form of family life. Hare Krishna. Sannyasis are very attracted to this particular explanation. He explained that family life, which is not centered on pure devotion to Krishna, is like a pit where people go to pass stool. And those who are attached to such family life are like worms living in the stool. And it's very difficult to escape from that school. Because the worms, they love stool. You take them out of stool and they'll just run right back to it. Only by the mercy of Krishna can one be liberated from that. And Raghunath Das said, I do not know what is Krishna's mercy. I only know that you have saved me. By the mercy of Lord Nityananda Prabhu and the blessings of all the Vaishnavas, he was able to achieve the personal service of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Lord Chaitanya said, actually, I am making jokes about your father and uncle. Actually, they're devotees, but they're materially attached. So through these examples, we can understand that one who is truly, sincerely teaching the path of Dharma as a parent, it is the child's great responsibility to hear from them, to serve them. And Lord Brahma, Srila Prabhupada, one of his most important books, he dedicated to his father, Gaur Mohan Day. And in that dedication, he explained that at the very beginning of my life, my father inculcated this spirit of devotion to Krishna, which was later fortified by my eternal spiritual master, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Gaur Mohan Day, from the earliest time of Srila Prabhupada's life, he saw his father worshipping the beautiful deities of Radha Govinda. He was always so pure in his life. He was always so attached to chanting the holy names of the Lord. And so much in the mood of service. Every single day he would invite no less than 5 sadhus to his house. And before feeding the family, Gaur Mohan Day would personally honor with great respect these sadhus and feed them prasad. And invite his family members to assist him in this. And after feeding all these sadhus prasad, he asked them for blessing. But not the kind of blessings that most people want today. He asked for the blessing, please pray that Srimati Radharani will give love of God to my son, will be merciful to my son. That is the blessing I desire. This is how Srila Prabhupada was brought up, with such a father. His mother wanted him to study law in the British colleges. In fact, she wanted him to go to London. But Srila Prabhupada's father was very anxious that he learns Murdanga. And sometimes the Murdanga teacher would be teaching him lessons and Srila Prabhupada would be so happy learning Murdanga. The mother would say, but he doesn't have time to study his academics. Father would say, no, let him be a good kirtan leader. Let him learn Murdanga nicely. So he kept that priority always forefront in his life. That the goal of life is to be Krishna conscious and to spread Krishna consciousness. So this is Krishna conscious culture. And here we find Swayambhuva Manu establishing Yajyaracharati Sreshtas Tathare Vitaroga,
that what the great people do, the common men follow. Grihasthas who actually want to achieve perfection in life should emulate the example of Rama and Swayambhuva Manu. And children in a Krishna conscious family should emulate the example of Swayambhuva Manu. And through this process, we could actually learn how to achieve the perfection of devotional service. Thank you very much. Is there any questions? Yes.
Maharaj, does anything change in present circumstances where most of the relationships are estranged, if not divorced?
Obviously things change if that's the circumstance. But we should understand that the sanctity of vows of marriage are very precious, and it is our service to our spiritual master to maintain them and the sanctity of them. And that is also our very great service to our children, is to maintain the purity of our vows. Srila Prabhupada and all the acharyas are always very concerned about that. When the husband and the wife are not completely dedicated to the sacrifice of remaining together in Krishna consciousness, then it creates a hellish atmosphere, not only for themselves, for their children, and for the whole society. In Kali Yuga, it's a very great sacrifice to stay together for anyone. But it is the greatest service if we do so in Krishna consciousness. Any other questions? Yes.
Maharaj, if the guru has some expectations of the disciple, not necessarily instructions, but just general expectations, if the disciple feels that he can't instantly fulfill those, is that displeasing to the guru?
If the disciple is not earnestly, wholeheartedly trying, then it is a great disappointment for the spiritual master. The spiritual master is not attached to the fruits of your activities, as you're not supposed to be attached to the fruits of activities. But he wants to see the earnest desire and willingness to give your life to try. And if you are willing to do that, you are a success, whatever the physical results may be. But if you're not willing to try, or if you are trying half-heartedly, that is a great disappointment. Why it is a disappointment? Because the spiritual master's joy in life is to see you make spiritual progress. And to the degree you wholeheartedly try to execute the service of assisting him in the service of his Guru Maharaj, to that degree you will make spiritual progress. You will get the mercy of his Guru, you will get the mercy of Krishna. And you will please him by doing so. So we have to very wholeheartedly try. That is the perfection of our life. And everyone can do that. There is no one who cannot. You can say, I cannot do it, but you cannot say that I cannot try. You try with your whole heart. You put other things aside. You make this your purpose. And you may be surprised how Guru Parampara can inconceivably empower you to do things that you cannot do. Any other questions? Yes.
Maharaj, earlier we said that anyone is to pay them for the service that somebody else has given, then one should be angry. And that type of anger is spiritual. It made me thinking, you know, society, we have so many examples broken with so many different gurus. And sometimes the tendency is, you know, I like to worship the deities. I worship and serve my guru, but there's very little enthusiasm or spirit of cooperation to serve all the gurus, all the sannyasis, all the. So how, we can't really get angry if the Lord is going.
We can't, but we do. That is the problem.
So what's the best way? To just remain humble, accept the spirit of non-cooperation, and let the service to the Guru, you know, be precarious?
Ultimately, all the gurus of the Hare Krishna movement are servants of Srila Prabhupada. And all gurus of this movement want Srila Prabhupada's will to be fulfilled. And in order for that will to be fulfilled, there must be cooperation. There must be a sense of unity. So to please your guru means to create that atmosphere wherever you may be residing. And that means without compromising our personal spiritual standards, we should become very humble and flexible in whatever is required to create that sense of unity which will push forward the mission of Srila Prabhupada. That will please all gurus. Krishna is like the root of the tree. And within this tree of ISKCON, Srila Prabhupada is the root. And we are all branches and leaves and twigs and everything else. If Srila Prabhupada's will is fulfilled, all the gurus will be sincerely pleased, hopefully. That is the standard. Because their goal in life is to please their Guru Maharaj, Prabhupada. And your goal of life is to please your Guru Maharaj, whose goal in life is to please Srila Prabhupada. That is the unifying factor of the Hare Krishna movement. What pleases? We must maintain a high sense of purity. We must strive to be creating a more spiritual atmosphere to attract people. And we must be striving to preach through book distribution, through programs. It is a preaching movement. We must be united to preach properly. So sometimes the details of our particular service in order to push forward this purpose, we may be asked to do things we have no propensity for. We may want to do one thing, but somebody tells us to do something else. To be humble and do the needful is the greatest service we can do. That anger as a tool to help that devotee overcome his anarthas and become more pure. Prabhupada would become angry. I'm sure you heard so many stories of Prabhupada's anger. Sometimes he was like Narasimha Dev. He would roar with philosophy. But the next moment he would be complete after he just taught the lesson he wanted to and penetrated the ego that he wanted to. Sometimes if you speak very nicely to someone, they say, yes, yes, very nice. But if you roar, then the message goes into their hearts. So after he got the message into their heart, then immediately he was just completely calm and peaceful and talking regularly. Because it wasn't really anger, material anger. It was just he would use it as a tool to get through to his disciple, to make an impression. So if we are actually in such a position of authority where we can, without unfulfilled lust or
unfulfilled ego, if we can use anger as a tool to help someone, not as an outburst, but as a technique, then anger is very beneficial. But most of us, if we become angry, we just cause a mess and offenses. So we should not be angry with any Vaishnavas unless we actually have that capacity. If a Vaishnava is seriously and genuinely making aparads, then anger to defend is natural. But we have to be very careful. Yes?
Well, it appears there may also be another kind of anger. Devotees are aware of outbursts of anger being misaligned with spiritual life. So often they kind of restrain themselves on a kind of an explosive level, but sometimes there's a kind of anger that sits there and seeds, and people become unaware that it's overtaken them in terms of their motives to get even or to get back at somebody. So even though they appear to still be observing all the codes, it still becomes a driving force, a sense of getting even or whatever. So how to become aware, even when it may not manifest in such an obvious way, how to become aware of more subtle states of anger within us?
Subtle states of anger within us. On two levels. One is by nice chanting of Hare Krishna and sadhana. It cleanses these subtle influences from within. But at the same time, we have to learn how to be honest in Krishna consciousness in a Krishna conscious way. That in Vaishnava dealings, there is a way to deal with these situations. In a humble way, to reveal one's mind, to reveal one's own weaknesses, to either that person or to a senior Vaishnava. And actually seek help. First of all, we should understand bad feelings toward a devotee is bad feelings toward Krishna. You cannot separate. Every devotee is a representative of Krishna. If we're feeling bad thoughts toward a devotee, that's a bad feeling toward Krishna. It's an impediment in our spiritual advancement. We shouldn't hold on to it. If it's in our heart, we should be trying to do anything and everything to get rid of it. We shouldn't try to serve that poison within us. We should try to get it out. And how to get it out? For that, we have to take shelter of our sadhana. And we should also inquire from senior Vaishnavas, help me. There's something within me that is destroying my Krishna consciousness. Help me, save me. What can I do? And be honest. Is that all right? We shouldn't let that feeling make us commit aparads, but at the same time, we should just not let it go on burning like fire. Either way, because if it burns like fire, it's just a matter of time till it explodes. You can't hold it in forever. You have to deal with it. It's like a cancer. Some surgery has to be there to take it out. The surgery is Harinam Kirtan. And inquiring submissively from a doctor devotee, a senior devotee, physician, please remove this cancer within me of ill feelings toward another Vaishnava. How could I do it? It's killing me. Yes?
You mentioned that disorders like that are a cancer, right? So they need surgery. All too often we remain unaware of our own needs for surgery, we become acutely aware of other people's needs for surgery.
And we like to be surgeons.
There's a certain...
we don't like to be patients.
Sorry.
We don't like to be the patient, we like to be the surgeon.
There's a certain...
But in Krishna consciousness, you can only be a good surgeon if you're a good patient.
There's a certain desire sometimes which is genuine to assist another.
We don't like to be the patient, we like to be the surgeon.
There's a certain...
But in Krishna consciousness, you can only be a good surgeon if you're a good patient.
There's a certain desire sometimes which is genuine to assist another person through surgery.
Mm.
At the same time, it can sometimes be inappropriate, both one's motive or the time, place and circumstance or the tenor of the relationship. Again, how to know when it's the right time to assist others in that way, because honest Vaishnava relations seem to suggest that good feedback between devotees is helpful for all. How to know when one's own motives aren't correct, or that it's not the right time, or the circumstances are not better?
First of all, you have to be sincere. If you're sincere, then Krishna will give you the proper understanding, either from within or from the help of others. If you are not sincere, then material nature, through the three modes of material nature within you, will give you the answers. In other words, your false ego. And what is sincerity? Sincerity in Krishna consciousness means to earnestly and honestly aspire to be a servant, not an enjoyer, not a master. And if we really want to be a servant, we have to be a little bit contemplative and introspective in our dealings. We have to actually think and pray. Am I doing this because I really and truly want to help this person's Krishna consciousness? Or is there something else in there? Is there a personal motive, or am I doing it as a selfless servant? If there is doubt, better not to perform this surgery. So that is very important. And we can inquire from other devotees who are more experienced than ourselves to evaluate the situation. Even amongst surgeons, if there's an operation to be performed, many surgeons will consult senior surgeons before doing. That is the etiquette amongst doctors. So we should consult to make sure what we're doing is actually to the best interest of that person. And we should also very carefully evaluate our own motives in our own heart. It's very, very important. And actually, unless we're in a position of some sort of authority by the inconceivable arrangement of the Lord, it is better not to chastise others. Better to encourage others. The best encouragement is your example. Because if there's one thing that is very difficult for devotees to tolerate, it's when somebody tells them to do something but they do not do it themselves. If we do it ourselves, we'll be surprised. We usually don't even have to tell anyone. They just do it naturally because they see and they want to follow. But if the necessity there is to tell, if you're actually following, that will have potency. If you really want to serve someone by helping them Krishna conscious, be a good example of Krishna consciousness. Don't offend Vaishnavas. Be very humble and sincere. Be willing to make great sacrifices for the mission of Guru and Gauranga. Keep very, very nice exemplary sadhana. If we do those things and we actually care about someone and come and say, please, Prabhu, please, be like this, it's for your own interest. He will think yes. what can I say? But if we're not doing and we're saying, then we're actually hurting them. In the sense that they'll think, why are you, they may not say it. They may say it, they may think it. Why you're saying like this? If it's so important, why don't you do it? Just like I remember 1972 in New York City, Radha Govinda Temple, Henry Street in New York. Prabhupada was giving lecture, inspiring the devotees to distribute books. He says, you must read these books. If you want to distribute these books, you must read these books. He said, you go and you take, you give someone a book and say, this is a very good book. This will save your life. You take it, you buy it, you read it. And the person says, do you read this book? You say, no, I don't read, I only sell. So the person will think, if it's such a good book, why you don't read it? So if we want potency in our preaching, we must simultaneously be acting. Then we will have the maximum potency. Does that answer your question? You ask very intellectual questions, and I'm a very simple man. I hope you're satisfied. Any other questions? Any Matajis have questions? Yes.
Marsh, can we become 100% dedicated to trying to serve Guru from day one in spiritual life?
The question is, can we become 100% dedicated to serve Guru the first day we come to spiritual life? You can be 100% according to your capacity, which obviously will not be 100%. Just try your best. You may only have 1% capacity, but you should utilize 100% of that 1%. And gradually you'll have 2%, and then 10%, and then 90%. And if you use 100%, if you use 100% of that 90% capacity you have, then Krishna will give you 91%. When you use 100% of that 91% capacity, then Krishna will give you 92%. In this way, we make spiritual advancement. Yayatamam prapadyante tamstataiva bhajamya. Krishna says, as you surrender unto me, I reward you accordingly. If we approach Krishna half-heartedly, Krishna will give us half-hearted realizations. If we approach him with some motivation, Krishna will give us, he will fulfill our motivation, but he will not give us himself. But if we very honestly and sincerely are trying to overcome these anartas, or these unwanted desires and these egoistic ideas, and we're fighting against them and trying to actually be humble and sincere and strict in our principles, then Krishna will see that we're sincere and he will help us. He will give us himself and he will give us wonderful realizations, even the first day, if we have that sincerity. Does that answer your question? One more question, may there be? Yes, Prabhu.
Last night, what you said about the demons, it seems like they are performing great service for Krishna's pastimes by using his activities and his appearance and his mode. So, how we should take that? Because usually we speak very badly about the demons, but from what you said yesterday, it seems like they're assisting the Lord.
The question is, it seems like the demons are assisting their Lord, the Lord in his Leela, and yet we talk so bad about demons. Hare Krishna. You should not be a demon and think that I'm assisting the Leela of the Lord. You should not think that I, because I'm such a terrible influence on everyone's lives here in the temple or in the congregation,
Actually, I'm doing great service by I'm making devotees' lives so miserable and making so many aparads that they're all crying out for Krishna. So this is my service. This is my compassion, my mercy. That is not the process. So was Narada Muni. Narada Muni was thinking, I wish I could think of Krishna so much like Shishupal. But we should understand that these demons were associates of Krishna. They were not ordinary demons. You cannot be like that. They were very special demons. And they had to suffer and die at the hands of God. And ultimately, most of them just got Sayujya Mukti. That means impersonal liberation. Therefore, the great devotees like Prabodhananda Saraswati, they do not want mukti, because they say that's what Krishna gives demons. We want bhakti. That's what Krishna gives his devotees. So yes, Krishna can even use the worst people. He can use them somehow or other, even with their... If you act demoniacally, or if someone else in this world acts demonically, they have to pay the price of the sins. If they offend devotees, they have to suffer terribly. But even those people with such ill motives, Krishna uses them to actually help the Vaishnavas. It is true. He actually uses them to help the Vaishnavas make spiritual progress by dealing with them and taking shelter of Krishna and fighting with them. Duryodhana acted very demoniacally. But if it wasn't for Duryodhana, there would be no Mahabharata. There would be no Bhagavad Gita. And although Duryodhana died a miserable death with a broken spine laying in the field of Kurukshetra, suffering terribly, still, he was envious. He misused his independence, but still Krishna used him for his own glorious purpose. So Srila Prabhupada very much pointed out and criticized the demoniac mentality. And wherever we see that demoniac mentality, we must be very much aware and we must fight against it. Whether it's outside of us or within us, we must fight against that demoniac mentality. That is our duty. But actually, those influences, if we are sincere, they will only bring us closer to Krishna. And if we are insincere, they will take us away from Krishna. May we express our sincerity by how we make choices and what association we keep.
Why Duryodhana went to the heavenly
plan? Huh?
Why Duryodhana went to the heavenly plan? He was such a person.
Because he left his body in the presence of Krishna. Actually, the heavenly planets was just a temporary stopover. Prabhupada said everyone in the battlefield of Kurukshetra went back to Godhead because they left their body in the presence of the personal form of Krishna. Yes, Mataji. Yes. Personal question? Huh? I have my right to answer or not.
Thank you. Srila Prabhupada, so I am detecting on this. And I'm just thinking, I just wonder, if you ask Srila Prabhupada, why should, what happens if Srila Prabhupada was just seeing you between so many hundreds of people?
There was over 20,000 people in the Pandal program in Bombay. First night of the Pandal, biggest audience Prabhupada ever had, first night. And he sent Guru Das to collect me from the ocean of material existence. He came way to the back and said, Srila Prabhupada, I would like you to sit next to him. And I asked, how does Prabhupada know who I am? And he didn't answer. And I was too shy to ask Prabhupada. But my understanding is, he is very merciful to the most fallen. Hare Krishna. I think so. I think so. You have analyzed correctly. Yes.
Maharaj, from all the class today, I find that one has to be an expert to be a family leader. I find myself a fool and also a leader. And I have mucked up my children's lives in the sense that I don't know much about being an expert. How can I rectify this?
You should always think yourself a fool. You should never think yourself an expert. But a Krishna conscious fool is one who understands, I do not know, and inquires submissively. And then what he hears, he follows. If you always think yourself a fool, you will always follow Guru and Gauranga. Being fool means taking a humble position, not being proud. But then we must simply follow. And if we follow nicely, that is the perfection of our life. Then Krishna and Guru can, through us, if we just be an instrument, through us, can give mercy to your family members and to so many others. Just be honest and sincere and follow nicely and inquire submissively. And Krishna will use you as his own personal paraphernalia to give Krishna consciousness to the world. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.